Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Chef and businesswoman Clodagh McKenna, good afternoon.
Businesswoman, I love that.
Yes, businesswoman. Entrepreneur, if I could say it. Yeah. So now, we will endeavour not to encourage each other to go into such deep Cork accents that nobody knows what we're saying, but it'll happen. Watch the slide now begin.
It will.
So come here, I love your new cookbook, Clodagh's Happy Cooking. Kind of all like fairly easy, doable recipes, good bang for your buck, and it's kind of good mood food, isn't it? And there's also lots of photographs in the book of you looking very happy. But I've always felt you're kind of an up person anyway. I think it was your mother taught you to be happy, did she?
It is. My mother was and is such an incredible, inspiring woman. I mean, I think as a lot of Irish mothers were in the 80s and 70s, when you get to this age, you really think about what they did, what they went through, and how they move things forward for so many women that are of my generation. She was such a positive, happy person. She worked full time, had a house of four, but still managed to have so much fun with us. We'd be shopping on Patrick Street in Roche's Stores and going on a Wednesday. Always remember it, after school. And she'd be finished work and then, or Thursday, sorry. And then we'd go into the lifts and immediately start the Irish dancing in the lifts. And we'd all be hysterical in there. And she'd be like, quick, 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 dancing, dancing, dancing. And we'd be terrified that it would stop and somebody would come in and see us. But she was so incredible. She taught me such a brilliant work ethic and always taught me, you know, to just to go for whatever I wanted to, but really like drilled it into me, never to worry about what anybody thinks of you. And that's really stuck with me. Like, I really don't care too much about what people think about me outside my family and friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel responsible and, you know, and I want to be a good person, but you know, she's taught me so much.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a great gift to have, that liberty of not worrying what people are thinking.
Yeah.
And then something I didn't realise, another great mentor of yours, when you went to Ballymaloe, Rory O'Connell, who people will know from this show on TV and everything for its lovely chocolatey tones, and he makes recipes that I'm not going to make, but I love watching him making them. He kind of took you under his wing.
He did. When I did the Ballymaloe course 26 years ago, I then went and worked under Rory at Ballymaloe House, and he took me under his wing. He was, and is still to this day, is my mentor. And he is, for people who don't know him very well, what is really wonderful for people to know about him is that he is an artist, like a true artist.
Yeah.
He has this incredible gift with food, with art, with making things beautiful.
Yes.
He's an incredibly gentle, kind man. And, you know, I went down to Ballymaloe and, you know, I was definitely intimidated walking through the doors. You know, I came from a working class family in, you know, grew up in the countryside just outside Kerrypike in Cork.
Yeah.
And I was intimidated for sure going in thinking everybody else was posh and I wasn't, you know. And he made me feel that I really mattered, and he brought out a love for food from me, and I owe it to him. I owe it absolutely. I did this speech at my 50th birthday party to him, you know, only a few months ago. I owe so much to that man, and it has really taught me to then go on and teach other people and also make sure that everybody who works around me is always treated equally.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your 20s and 30s then were it was like a sprint really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Farmers markets, you got into TV, running restaurants, all that.
Yeah, it was a sprint. I look back now and I think, oh my God, those 20 years of my life, I did, made five TV series. I was the resident chef on the Today Show in America. I used to do the Rachel Ray Show, did the farmers markets for 3 years, which was still one of the best times of my life, opening up and running farmers markets around Ireland. Wrote 8 cookery books. This is now my 9th. And then moved to England.
Yeah. Well, you moved to England in around when you hit 40. Did you hit a bit of a wall at that point?
I did. Yeah. If I'm being completely
burnout, like,
being completely open and honest, I all of a sudden became a manager within the restaurants, and I was so disconnected from food, and I just hit a wall. It's exhausting. Like, my hands go up to everybody out there that runs restaurants, because your life is taken over by it. You know, it's Monday to Sunday. There is no time off. You're only as good as your last dish that you put up. So I moved to London. I was only going there for like 6 months.
Yeah.
I got a little coach house in Highbury Fields and I ended up spending 2 years there. Probably the best 2 years that I could have given myself. And when I got there, I changed everything for myself. I started meditating. I started juicing every morning. My energy had kind of really gone low. And I started going through the perimenopause at that point. And so I started really looking after myself because I was so irritated. You know, I'm quite an energetic person and it really frustrated me that there was so much I wanted to do. I really wanted to look after myself, but I didn't have the energy I had in my 20s and 30s. So I just stopped. I had a whole kind of pause in life.
There was a Buddhist center near where you were living.
Right behind. It was almost like a moment. I walked around to go down to the newsagents one morning. I'm trying to visually remember it exactly. And when I walked past, I saw this big Buddhist retreat center and I was like, jeez, I'd love to do that sometime. There was something about it that I kind of was curious about. So I walked in and I said, do you do meditation classes? And they said, yeah, we do them for £5 for 1 hour every day at 12 o'clock. And I said, OK, I'm going to book into the 12 o'clock one. And I came around, went back in and that was a complete change for me. That doing the meditation, learning how to do it. And I've done it ever since, every single morning. And it's really helped with my, you know, with what we all deal with. We all deal with anxiety. Nobody is like, we're all the same pretty much. We all deal with the same worries, same anxiety. You know, every week I'm in front of 3 million people cooking. I can't go wrong. I can't get it wrong, you know.
Yeah.
I've got to be steady. I've got to be present and calm. And so I meditate, and it's the meditation that has really, really helped me. I use an app called Calm. You know, I pay my subscription. I'm not in any way affiliated with them. That is a really brilliant tool if anybody wants to start with it. But this is all in the book. I've added all of this to the book as well. The rituals.
Juicing as well is a big thing for you.
Juicing is amazing. I've been doing it now for 8 years. We do 2 pints every morning, one for Harry, one for myself. I do different kind of juices throughout the week. I have an everyday green juice. I have my Guinness pint glass that I put it all into and it nourishes me with everything. I put fresh turmeric in there. Fresh turmeric is really brilliant because it stops all, or it helps stop all inflammation inside. I put ginger in there for my immune system. I get all my greens in there. Beetroot, celery is really good for, you know, it's a diuretic. So it's really good for flushing out any unwanted liquids in your body. Sets me up for the day.
As we go on, we might take a few recipes. So now, I like the sound of the Bloat Be Gone juice, but you think the brightening juice would be the one to give to people, yeah?
Well, yeah, I think the brightening is great because at my age, and I don't know, well, any age actually, you're always looking at yourself. The brightening juice really brightens your skin. It helps brighten your skin and actually elevates your mood as well. The one thing about that I talk about a lot in this book is that the food and your mood are completely linked.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about that enough, you know? It's whatever you eat is how you feel mentally. So if you want to change how you're feeling and also physically your energy, you know, I'm hoping that this book is like a really good manual for
it. But there's actually a very simple thing you say in it as well, which kind of struck me because I think I'm cooking less and less. The very act of cooking for yourself is such an important choice to make because it is easy to kind of do it less and eat more kind of ready meals and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is. The act of it is so enjoyable. Do you know, it's quite similar to working out in a little bit in that you have to decide, OK, I'm going to start cooking and I'm going to do it at 6 o'clock. And I'm going to get organized on a Sunday night. Instead of getting your workout gear organized for the week, you're deciding what you're going to eat during the week and getting your shopping list ordered or whatever,
so
however
you
do it.
So you have to be intentional about it and say, okay, I
think so, yeah.
I
think it is. And it makes it really easy if you plan it out as well, especially lunches. I think lunches are so key to us because when we're during our day and we stop then at 1 o'clock, whatever we have at 1 o'clock really reflects on how we feel for the rest of the afternoon. And I know for sure now that I'm in, you know, 50, you know, and I've got like a young team working around me and they're all like bright sparked at 3 o'clock. And I cook lunch every day for my team, 3 days a week when I'm actually down at the farm. And we have soups and I'm always pulling in like pulses and lentils and ingredients like that that will really help with your energy but won't zap your energy for the afternoon. So there's a whole section on lunches in the book as well.
Okay. We'll put up a few recipes after the show, but the brightening juice, just quickly talk us through it for people.
The brightening juice is beetroot, celery, ginger, turmeric, carrot, orange, a little twist of black pepper, which really helps the turmeric to work its best. And you blitz it all together or you do it in a juicer. And it's so easy to make.
You did it there off the top of your head. Yeah, sounds easy. I suppose the two things that brightened up your life were you mentioned Harry Herbert, your husband, and then you got the job as the resident chef on ITV's This Morning. Yeah. Did that all happen around the same time?
Not really. I was doing the Today Show in America, in New York, and planning to move there from London. And I had just started, and then I met Harry and just started dating Harry, who definitely has been the brightest thing that has come into my life. Got so lucky.
Yeah.
Took long enough. And then I started doing a show called Steph's Packed Lunch. They offered me a full-time gig. And then Martin Frizzell, who is my then boss at This Morning, invited me to come in for a meeting and offered me a contract with ITV This Morning. So, and then that really made all the decision-making quite easy. I was like, brilliant, I've got a job here and I can stay here and see where it goes with Harry.
Okay. And that was the Philip Schofield, Holly Willoughby kind of era of This Morning. So
yeah.
Did you suddenly have a huge profile out of nowhere? Yeah.
100%. Yeah, all of us. I mean, the viewership was just so big. It was almost instantaneous, you know, going from nobody knowing me in the UK to all of a sudden walking down the King's Road and, you know, people stopping you and telling you their problems. It's, you know, it's probably like something like this show or, you know, where people really feel connected with it. People really feel in the UK, feel really connected with This Morning. It's been going forever.
You're part of their life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then tell me a bit about Harry and about you casually called it the farm there as if it was so humble. Just to explain to people, no, you don't actually live in Downton Abbey.
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't live in Downton Abbey.
On the grounds, is it?
It's on the grounds. The grounds is called Highclere Park and Harry's family have been there for 8 or 9 generations. Harry was the second son and we...
So he was the spare...
Luckily for me, with no big attachments, yeah. You know, with castle, I mean. And so then we moved into a forgotten part of the park called Broadspear. And then when I say forgotten, my followers on Instagram will know because I videoed it. It was forgotten.
Okay.
And, you know, the house was covered with black ivy. There was a wall garden there, but it was completely covered. Hadn't been used in over 100 years. There were two things growing there pretty much, like vegetable wise or fruit wise, was two apple trees. And it was completely overgrown. There was no view, no nothing. And, you know, we got 100 acres. And for me, coming from a background where, you know, half an acre growing up in the countryside was huge. Yeah. I just couldn't believe this. I got stuck in and I was like, the dream to create a farm. And we put in every bit of energy over the past and still do. You know, it's phone calls this morning. Have the chickens been fed? Are the cattle okay? Are the pigs all right?
So you're a hands-on farmer, like in the morning you have chores you have to do.
Yeah.
What do you have to do in the morning?
I get up at 6 every morning. I let the chickens out, feed them, do all their watering, then do the ducks, then go around and do the pigs, check on the pigs, feed them, make sure their watering is okay. Then go down and check on the cattle, make sure they haven't eaten a branch and that the watering system is all okay and no fencings have been broken and to give them a count.
You do all this for real? This is not kind of part of your brand, right?
Yeah, for real. Yeah. Harry's just outside. He'll pop in and tell you yes. It is, yeah. No, I do it. I love it. If I had one thing I could choose from all my career, if I had to give up everything and have one thing, it would be just the farm. It's for anybody out there that has a small scale, you know, sustainable farm with lots of different animals, or grows, or even has a couple of chickens, and know what I mean. It changes your life. It's like the chickens walking into the house. You know, we have a large cottage and it's all kind of dogs in there and chickens. The chickens will come in and sit in the dog's bed and, you know, going down to feed the pigs and scratch them. We've got this big brush that we scratch the pigs with in the evening. You know when there's yard brushes?
Yeah,
and they come running through the woods when they see us.
I'd say it's like hoovering, very rewarding work.
It's so rewarding. And they're squashing themselves up against the fence to try to get brushed. And you know, and for me, inspiration-wise and creatively-wise, you know, creating a book or creating recipes, I have to come up with recipes every single week, about 20 recipes a week. Having all my vegetables growing, I've got a little pickling shed where everything from the garden I bring into the pickling shed and I create recipes, we film there, I pickle there, preserve there, all the rest, yeah.
And you have a little Irish pub there as well?
I have, well, it's a Cork pub, which you must come to, Brenton. It's called the Cork Arms.
I've made the cut. Yeah.
You've made the cut. It's called the Cork Arms. When Harry and I were getting married, do we have time for the story?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. When Harry and I were getting married, we were looking at renting a big marquee to have a big party because like half of Ireland was coming over. So we needed to like, and they were coming for a week. So we needed a big space. And it was so expensive. I just was like, we can't spend that money on something that's going to be here for a week and gone. We've got so much to do in the property already. And I had been trying to convince Harry for about 2 years before that, that we needed an Irish pub and that there was this incredible fallen down, really large, we don't know if it was a shepherd's hut or a pheasant hut. I know he's outside there now correcting me. Well, whatever it was a big hut.
Yeah.
At the top of the woods.
He can come in if he wants. No, he doesn't want to come in.
He does, he does. He'd be dying to come in. And yeah, that had fallen down and I'd been convincing him that, oh, we should like turn this into an Irish pub because I really miss the pub culture. So where we are, for me to go to the pub in our local area, it would take about 20 minutes to get to a pub. Then you can't really drink and you come back. I wanted a pub to be able to walk up to and have proper Guinness.
But you need the atmosphere as well, obviously. So who comes to the pub?
So we built the pub from all the fallen trees in our property. Yeah. And then every year, so I decided, we blessed it with the wedding, which had, I'd say, thank God it's still standing after that wedding.
The capacity of the pub?
The capacity is about 60. And then I started a St. Patrick's Day party every single year. And we have Imelda May, who's one of my best friends, who's now moved back to Dublin. She used to live like down beside me in the countryside. She taught me how to play the Byron in there. She sang her heart out there over 100 times, probably. We have really big Irish music sessions.
Oh yeah, who else comes? Anyone I'd know?
My really close friend, Bob Geldof, whose concert I missed last night, and I know he's listening now, whose concert I missed last night to be on this radio show today. They had their 50th anniversary Boomtown Rats.
He was on with us a couple of weeks
ago. I'm so sorry, Bob. I missed your concert last night, but he has played the spoons in there. And Sean, who's listening to
you. He plays the spoons.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
Of course he sings. He's the lead singer of the Boomtown Rats.
Yeah.
And he sung in there. His beautiful wife, Jean, is an amazing singer, has played in there. Who else? We've had everybody in there. Everybody who's Irish. It's a real centre of Irish culture and I really wanted that for that pub, that when you walk in, there's books in there, they're all amazing Irish authors there. Oh no, here comes Harry.
Harry Herbert, how are you?
No secrets, okay?
I'm not used to meeting people taller than me. How tall are you?
Where should he sit here?
Yeah, he should sit there.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, very nice good. To be here.
So I wasn't
meant to be here. I'm listening
with
your next guest who's going to talk about fishing and so I'm grilling him on fishing.
Yeah.
I'm 6'6".
He's a fine man.
He's a fine man.
So Harry, have you had your life completely colonised by Irish people in Ireland now, yeah? You basically...
I can't tell you how happy I am to be... have met so many wonderful people, friends of Clodagh's, oh my goodness, you know, our, as she's been telling you, our St. Patrick's Day packed out pub, from visits to Cork and Dublin. And I've been going to Dublin quite a few times before Clodagh came into my life. I'm in the horse racing business.
Yes.
So I'll be buying some of your wonderful Irish bred horses.
So you knew Ireland anyway and had a good connection with here, did you?
A very narrow connection, because really I was sort of came out for the sales and went back. So I didn't know it like I would know it.
Like it or not.
But
you know Cork really well.
I love Cork. I love the... It is extraordinary. I mean, obviously, I could see it in my darling wife, you know, the ability to, you know, this, everybody talks to everybody. It's a phenomenal gift.
Yeah.
That the Irish
has it loosened you up a bit, like coming from...
Yeah, I think I was quite loose anyway.
Yeah, typical establishment.
Exactly, sort of stuck
upper lip chat.
Brit,
no,
but very much so. I mean, there's nothing more fun than going into a supermarket, wherever it happens to be, like in Cork with Clodagh, and then watching bit by bit as the queues, you know, start, with everybody wanting to have a chat. And the chat is so nice. The chat is so sort of genuine, which I think it's really heartwarming. But it's a great gift that the Irish have.
And yeah. You're very well fed as well, are you?
I am, but I'm. This is. This,
I don't everyone, mean that. I don't no. mean that. By the way, in no. you look well fed. I mean,
expects me to be to have put on a huge amount of weight since Clodagh came into my life. But the opposite has happened for two reasons. One, because of amazing healthy food, delicious food that I'm lucky enough to have day in, day out.
So are you on the juicing and the eating kind of wholesome food as well?
Very much obviously. So.
And we have a balance. And that's in the book as well. Yeah, so it's Monday to Friday. We're very
so the weekend,
strict about it.
You kind of let loose a little
and
bit.
And weekend, it's like Friday night. So yeah, Monday to Friday, we're juicing, really healthy quick suppers in the evening, healthy lunches, give you lunch to take to work and everything. And
really?
I'm a real trad wife.
You get a packed lunch in a lunchbox.
Well, I do. It occasionally goes awry when, you know, I take my team out for the occasional pub lunch.
But it
has made an extraordinary difference, because I have lost weight. I feel a whole lot better, a whole lot more energised. And it works. It really
this was
works.
All planned. You had planned for him to come in and extol the virtues of your book and your regime.
But the weekend then, Friday, we're like, you know, we will never be those people that can do it all the time.
Yeah.
Friday night, is it 6 o'clock yet? Okay, 6 o'clock yet. We're straight up to the pub. And lots of our friends that live near in the area will come over for a drink as well. So we'll have a drink up at the pub. We'll cook up at the pub. And there's that whole section in the book about the weekend, because it's balance.
Will you give us, talk us through one chicken for the weekend? Because I think this is amazing.
Yeah. So I love a chicken. I love a roast chicken. When I was growing up, my mother would get one chicken about every 3 months. And it was really like, oh, God, we're having chicken. So I get a chicken in about once every 6 weeks. Roasted on a Friday, and then I have all the trimmings with it, like the sweet potatoes and the cream spinach and whatever. And then the next morning, after I've done my farm chores, I strip all the chicken meat off the carcass. And I get so much joy from doing it, because I'm like saving every little bit of chicken that's left after having the roast.
Yeah.
I put all of the brown and the white meat into the fridge, and all the fatty bits I give to the doggies. Then I get the carcass on. And I make a really great broth. And with that, I mean, you put the carcass into a pot, fill it with cold water, throw some other vegetables in there. You know, the recipes are in the book.
You're going to give us that to put up on the
You bring it up to the boil and you let it simmer for as long as you can, really. Like, if you can only do it for an hour, fine. But if you can do it for 4 hours, even better, and keep topping it up with water. And that's your basis for the weekend. You make a gorgeous risotto with it from that night, because the key to a good risotto is a good stock. But then on Sunday night, Harry's favourite all-time dish, and I think probably why he married me, is the chicken cuddle soup. So you use that broth, you take the broth out from the carcass, you know, with a sieve, you put it into a saucepan, add in slices of ginger.
And you take
ginger.
The fat out of the stock. You know, I remember my mother would, like, the fat would come up to the top. And
yeah, you can solidify. Skim the top of it if you do get a lot of it. But I usually take all that fat off the carcass before it goes in.
Okay.
And the doggies get that. But You put that into a pot then to make the chicken cuddle soup. You get all that lovely chicken that you took off on Saturday morning. You pop that into the stock. Then you put in some noodles, any kind of green vegetables that you might have, chili, ginger, simmer it away, and you've got the most amazing chicken cuddle soup. It's like what
so
the Jewish mom would do.
So that's your Sunday night takeaway then, kind of, really.
Yeah, takeaway, yeah. But really nourishing and healing, you know. It's so
good
for
you. You're such
a
lucky man. I thought it was funny that there's a recipe for Eggs Benedict in the book, and it's called Harry's Eggs Benedict, and I thought, oh, Harry makes the Eggs Benedict. But it's because Harry likes to eat the Eggs Benedict.
You make the scrambled eggs.
You make scrambled eggs.
Look, every man has to have a thing, and there you go. Listen, on the chicken stock, just two more quick things I do want to mention, because I was saying to you beforehand, actually, I'm kind of immune to cookery books at this stage after like 30, 40 years of them. But this is one I will be keeping. Instant bento noodles in 30 seconds.
Instant bento.
You do it in 30 seconds. But
okay. Instant bento noodles are basically like a more nourishing form of pot noodles. You put your vegetables, your ginger, your chili into a tub, a container to bring into work, and your noodles. You bring it into work and then you turn on the kettle, you pour it in, let it simmer for 5 minutes, and you've got really nutritious bento noodles, which are a lot better for you than
amazing.
Those cheaper noodles.
Harry goes off with that in the morning and then heads down to the pub for his steak and ale pie. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Listen, and we have to mention as well your viral pear, brie, and thyme tart.
I know. That got, like, together, we posted twice, over 4 million views on Instagram. It went a bit viral. It's a little fan of puff pastry that you put together, so simple, on a baking dish. And then in between the little folds of the pastry, you just simply put in brie, sliced pear, thyme, and then you whip up a little egg mixture with thyme in it and Parmesan cheese. You pour it all over it and you pop it into the oven, and then you finish it with a drizzle of honey afterwards. It's insane. It's
I can imagine. And you see, this is what I mean, bang for your buck. Anyone could do that, basically.
Anybody could do it.
And it doesn't require hours. And
exactly.
But what you're getting back is fantastic. So you're on the way to Ballygarvan now?
We're on our way to Cork. So exciting. I mean, I love Dublin, and we've had the most... Have you been to Bar Pez, by the way?
No, I haven't.
In Dublin. Oh my God, never been there before. We went in and had dinner there last night. It was unreal. Yeah. The food in Dublin is just banging. It's amazing. But excited to get down to Cork. I'm doing an event at the Ballygarvan, the pavilion in the Ballygarvan. I'll definitely Monday morning be in the English Market to say hello to everybody and get some bits and bobs to take back home.
And Harry, are you kind of the road manager? Do you go on the trips, yeah?
Delighted to be the road manager. I'm the allotted driver. As you can imagine, absolutely no shortage of banter in the car with Chloe. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And
Have the family taken to you in Cork?
Yes. I hope so.
Obsessed.
You know they're never going to tell you that, right?
Adore him.
The first meeting at the...
I'm second now.
It was the Middleton. Was it Middleton?
Middleton
Farmers Market.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of the most terrifying moments for me, because there was...
No, it was... Sorry, it was the Skibbereen Farmers
Skibbereen, Market. Skibbereen. And it was that moment of Chloe introducing her new boyfriend. And It was tense for a time.
Go on, tell me
more.
Well,
it was just the sort of the eyes sort of just looking at who is this guy and what on earth is our darling Clodagh doing with this? Isn't he tall? Oh, he's very tall. You know, very tall.
He's very posh.
And then a table brought out and chairs, and it was one of the most amazing.
So the farmers at the market.
Yeah.
Pulled out this big long table, and they all pulled their tables together to do one, it was all impromptu, one big long table down the middle of the market. And then everybody finished up the market and brought all the food to the table. And we had a big celebration, ended up having a big celebration lunch for himself.
Well, so there you go. I was away.
The
and
kind
running.
Of things you inspire.
Did
you think, the locals have organised a street party for me?
Because I used to have a stall there for years.
Oh, did you?
So they
yeah,
were like
yeah,
family to
yeah.
me.
Yeah, which is, it's a fantastic spot, actually.
Skibbereen Farmers Market. Yeah. Incredible.
It was very special. And then I remember the lunch in local pub afterwards as well.
In Skull.
In Skull.
Hackett's in Skull.
Which was without doubt one of the the greatest meal salad.
Soda
I've
bread
had.
And crack.
Listen, you're saying all the right things. We keep him. We like him. Thank you so much for coming in to us, Harry. You're a good
thanks
sport. And Clodagh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brendan.
Clodagh's Happy Cooking is in bookshops now. It's published by Hachette. Clodagh McKenna and Harry Herbert, a special bonus. Thank you very much.
Email brendan@rte.ie.